This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show. From Monday, the 18th of October, lovingly curated by our producer, Aiza Havilio, this morning. Kicking off with Serena Kelly and some of the big COVID stories today. Great news, below 100 cases for the first time in well over a year here in the UAE. Elsewhere, and it's not unrelated to be honest, consumer confidence is booming here in Dubai. Highest level for 10 years. How do we know that? Well, the guys at Dubai Economy have done a survey. We hear from Mohammed Ali Rashid Luta from Dubai Economy. Elsewhere, talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, they are flying at the moment, 62 grand for a Bitcoin. Going to hear from Bitcoin Matt, Matthew Blom of Equinix. And finally, the supply chain woes facing not just the global economy, but small businesses operating here in the UAE as well. Going to hear from the e-commerce site Clever Mama. Their founder, Suzanne Brown, tells us why. Get this, the shipping that used to cost $2,000 from China to the Middle East a couple of years ago is now costing as much as $15,000. How is she coping with that? All of that to come. First up, though, here is Serena with your headlines.
Ask Serena.
Hi, Serena.
Morning, guys.
Are you the Expo Mystery Man?
No, I am not. And if I was, I would be on a plane traveling with my very large check that's behind me.
Right, Serena Kelly, change the subject before I do start speculating wildly.
Stop. Okay, well, you know how in the last hour we were talking about this new possible service the RTA are introducing? Because obviously Jitex opened yesterday. Richard asked a question previously in the last hour during our chat segment. And you asked, and the Air and News Centre delivered, courtesy of Noni Edwards. Motorists in Dubai will soon be able to pay for parking through WhatsApp. Currently in the testing phase, expected to be rolled out within 2 weeks. How is it going to work? Just send the same information you would do on text message to 7275. The amount will be deducted from your parking e-wallet. How are you going to be charged? Because this is where Richard's question came in. Obviously, when you send a text message, a 30 fils is deducted from sending said text message. Ahmed Hassan Mahboub, Director of Parking at Dubai's Roads and Transport Authority, shared the details on how it works with ARN News.
It will be detecting the amount from your parking wallet. So that communication with Etisalat and whatever cost that will be associated with paying the SMS, you don't need to, SMS, in every transaction you will pay 30 fils. But in this service, you don't have to pay any other third party. You're just the cost of having WhatsApp.
So there is no other cost involved if you're using WhatsApp. It's just obviously sending the text message. You've got that 30 fils from sending the text message. But in regards to using WhatsApp, it is literally the amount of time that you are being charged for the parking that is deducted from your e-wallet. So there you go, Richard. We delivered for you. Question answered.
Which is great to know. I was crunching the numbers on how much it's going to save me over a year. I probably do 250 days a year at work-ish, I guess. Mm. 30 fils times 250 is about 100 dirhams I'm going to save. It's not a game changer.
It is. You count it in coffee.
I'd rather have it in my pocket than... Would I rather have it in my pocket
That's
than
a week's worth of coffee.
Exactly. It's a saving. We'll take it. Thanks, Serena.
You're most welcome. Now we're moving over to Expo Watch. Now, before we get into what's happening at Expo, can you recognize who this is?
Imagine you are standing in front of your peers, your friends, laughing at you. Everyone there, they laugh. This is why I became a pilot.
Can we recognize who that might be?
That's why I became a pilot. Is one of the astronauts?
First UAE astronaut Hazza Al Mansouri. He was speaking at a Q&A session yesterday at Expo 2020 Dubai because it's marking the start of this week's theme, Space Week. So you need to keep an eye on their calendar of events at Expo 2020 Dubai. You had Noura Al Matrushi. She was there as well. She's the first female Emirati astronaut selected from the latest batch of applicants. And Mohammed Al Mullah as well. He was also there. He was also selected. I've got another bit for you. This one is specifically probably for Richard.
Ugh.
Brandy, you need to play the clip.
Une chaleureuse bienvenue à tous. Tout le monde ici va participer à 6 jeux différents durant les 6 jours à venir.
Can you recognize?
I recognize the music.
Yeah. I managed to find a French remix. of Squid Game for you. It is a very, it's a French DJ who's actually put that together. I can send you the whole song if you like. But yes, I know Richard's seen Squid Game.
Richard, correct? Our native French speaker.
You've seen, yeah. Brandy, have you seen it yet?
I can't watch anything that's any more than PG. Oh, yes. I get upset in Bambi when, yeah. And I'm not going to put a spoiler in there. I can't cope.
Okay, so we know Squid Game set a lot of records. More than 130 million people have watched the Korean show. What's it got to do with Expo 2020 Dubai? The Korea Pavilion are letting you play Squid Game every day until November 14th. We have a video they've shared.
Presumably.
Okay, you need to watch the video to see what they are playing, okay? But we've shared it online through the Aero News Centre if you want to have a look. Timings have been shared as
well. I've lost the children.
Well.
No, I haven't.
Stop it. It's apparently, I think, between the hours of 3 and 4 that you can go down to the Korea Pavilion to play. But yeah, I definitely think that should be on one of your places to stop and check out when you're visiting Expo 2020 Dubai.
So my wife, diligently over the weekend, it's half term now, because the kids want to watch Squid Game. Obviously, they can't. They're age 8 and 11. It's adult content. Or it's violent content. And so she created a Squid Game at home for them. The Honeycomb Game.
Oh, yes.
But my wife's quite competitive. So they lost. So she shot them in the head with a Nerf gun.
The Honeycomb Game, I'm not going to spoil anything, but you've got to kind of take the shape out of the honeycomb, which is not easy at all. So, I'm sorry.
Didn't go down well.
Pallavi, competitive.
Dear. Don't want to be in your house. also, I've got a bit of in case you missed it, there are temporary restrictions currently placed on import of general cargo arriving at Dubai International Airport. I know this is something that you're probably across already, but they confirmed this in a statement to the Aero News Centre from the Dubai National Air Travel Agency, saying the backlog of cargo is reportedly caused by extraordinarily high volumes of cargo flown to Dubai. And they they're working to resolve the situation currently in place from yesterday, Sunday, until Tuesday, the 19th of October.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's talk about consumer confidence. As Brandy mentioned, it's at a decade high, according to the latest survey from Dubai Economy. 73% of consumers positive about their current job prospects. Joining us on the line now to give us more detail is the chief executive of the commercial compliance and also consumer protection sector within Dubai Economy, Muhammad Ali Rashid Luta. Good morning, Mohammed.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. What's the story behind the numbers?
Well, it was a very positive result that we witnessed through the Consumer Confidence Index. Definitely, this reflects the unprecedented level of positive sentiment towards the state of economy. And I think this is a very positive outcome of how Dubai succeeded in overcoming the economic challenges of COVID-19, which was a global issue and challenge, especially on the economies of countries, which really reactivated the economy. And we can see in the markets and on the streets how Dubai became busy again. This is definitely a proof of how Dubai succeeded in dealing with the challenges of COVID-19, especially the economic ones. And it was definitely reflected by having 86% of consumers believing that the current personal finances is very good, in addition to having 78% of them believing that the current state of economy is very good, and 85% of them, they believe that within the next 12 months, even the state of the economy will continue improving.
Clearly, this is better than this time last year, when the world was in probably the worst depths of the COVID crisis. But how does it compare to, say, 2019 or 2018, what I might call normal years in Dubai?
The main positive news here is that the index recorded its 10 years high So this is the highest ever index rating that we ever got since the launch of the index in 2011. We believe that how Dubai succeeded in overcoming the economic challenges of the global pandemic, in addition to that, having the expo hosted in Dubai. You know that the consumer confidence index, it's a very structured index that measures the sentiment of consumers toward the state of economy, the job prospects, and their personal finances. So having the success on how Dubai managed to deal with the economic challenges of COVID, in addition to hosting big events such as Expo, and having the markets busy again, all of these initiatives and activities took the sentiment of consumers to the highest level ever in the last 10 years.
So how are we going to spend our money if we're feeling so confident, Mohammed? I know you've broken it down into things like holidays, into things like clothing. What do we know?
Definitely, when the sentiment of consumers increases, this changes the behavior of consumer from worrying about the future and tending to save more, moving to spending more, not only on their needs, even going toward their wants. We noticed through the index that more than 50% of consumers will end up buying new clothes, buying electronics, and spending lots of their spare cash on vacations, either within the country as staycations or traveling abroad. All of these activities will really reflect how consumers are being very positive toward the current state of economy. And it really shows the trust that the consumers have toward the actions that have been made in the city.
Finally, Mohammed, let me ask you about what this means in the medium term for the economy. Brandy and I have been here since the late 90s. Obviously, you've been here a lot longer. We've seen a few boom and bust cycles here. Like every economy has business cycles. But how do we make sure that this confidence doesn't get out of hand, that we don't get what Alan Greenspan would have called irrational exuberance and a big boom leading to a bust afterwards?
To be honest, we noticed that some retailers started taking advantage of the positive sentiment of consumers by having very attractive sales and promotions in different products. It can be retails, can be cars, and consumers are being very wise in their selection. On the other hand, we noticed that there is a boom in the e-commerce. So lots of the e-commerce portals, they're trying to have either promotions or bundle offers. I think definitely having a positive sentiment from consumers will drive economic growth due to the increase of spending in the local economy.
Mohammed, busy day for you. We're going to let you go. Thanks very much indeed for your time. Appreciate it. That's the Chief Executive of Commercial Compliance and Consumer Protection down at Dubai Economy.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And on that note,
I'm going to be a Bitcoin billionaire, spending money like I don't care, mining coin in my underwear. I'm going to be a Bitcoin billionaire.
We do have the fully dressed Matt Blom on Microsoft Teams for you this morning. He is the global head of sales trading at Equinix, talking to us about Bitcoin's rise over $60,000 this weekend. 62, approaching its all-time high of 64. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Brandy. How are you?
I'm good, I'm good. Tell me, what's the story here?
The story has been the market has been waiting for the SEC to approve their first Bitcoin ETF. This has been something that's been eagerly awaited for a number of years. And we had the news last week that technically there's not been an approval, but the way the SEC rules is if they don't disapprove something, is allowed to operate. So we have our first Bitcoin ETF based on futures that will launch this week. And this is a big event that everybody's been waiting for.
Okay, it's based on futures. And that's interesting, isn't it? Because it's not these funds actually owning bits of Bitcoin. Tell me why that's important.
Yeah, it is very important and to distinguish between the two. And the reason the SEC have allowed this these two funds essentially to operate this week is purely because they price and they own futures as the underlying asset of the ETF. And the SEC are, you know, still some way away from approving a physical Bitcoin ETF purely because of hacking risk and owning wallets and things like this. They think there's more manipulation in a physical market than a futures market, which I would probably disagree with, but that's their view. But the key difference here is that people who are putting funds into these ETFs do not own any Bitcoin. They just have exposures there to the price of Bitcoins and the movements of that price. So from the market point of view and from the hodler's point of view and those people who, you know, want Bitcoin price to keep on going up, a physical Bitcoin would further reduce the supply that's available. It would take more and more, you know, Bitcoin out of liquidity, put them into the hands of the ETF holders who are likely to be long-term holders, which would be even more price positive. So there is a bit of risk that the SEC do not approve any physical Bitcoin ETFs for a long while, and that might dampen the spirits of the market when they realize that that's probably going to be their stance for the foreseeable future.
Is buying these ETFs less risky than buying Bitcoin directly, or is it just more expensive and more complicated?
It's definitely more expensive. Where it's more complicated, the key facts and the key message here is that the amount of money that can flow into ETFs is huge. And for those people who do not want to physically own Bitcoin and get accustomed with things like custody, ETFs is a very easy, very light touch way to get exposure to this asset class. And it's very likely that we start to see billions of dollars of inflows over the coming weeks of money that otherwise wouldn't have come into this space. And that's why Bitcoin's back approaching its all-time high again this morning.
What kind of interest are you expecting to see from actual exchanges and investors for these products?
We're very, very, very solid demand. I mean, we've seen it every time new products launch, and this is the first Bitcoin ETF in the US. So I think for those who come out quickly, it's going to be a very lucrative product for the asset managers themselves. But yeah, we're going to see strong demand coming into these products. It's actually two that go live this week. There's about another seven waiting to be approved, and then we have around 11 physical Bitcoin ETFs, which we won't really find out till the beginning, really middle of December. But we're going to see very strong demand, and that's why the price has rallied over the last week, as the market ensures that demand coming in is paying a fair high price.
Is this recognition of Bitcoin as a grown-up asset class, is it its seat at the table? I mean, we've still got China, still got others who are clamping down on mining and other bits of the Bitcoin empire.
It further legitimizes Bitcoin as an asset class. It's almost going to get to the point where we'll stop having that part of the conversation within kind of probably the next 4 or 5 months. That will just be removed from the table, and it will be given that Bitcoin and crypto as an asset class is here to stay. And I think that, you know, the US coming out of proven ETFs is big news because we've waited so long for it. The Winklevoss brothers first applied for one 8 years ago and it was declined. So we've had 8 years of rejection. So it's quite a big moment. I think over time it will become, you know, less of a thing. And I think we'll just get used to the fact that Bitcoin is another asset class that is investable. The kind of the watershed moment, the big event is going to be when the major pension funds allow you to invest your pension in Bitcoin. At the moment, that's still very much off limits for pension holders. At that moment, that's when Bitcoin's finally, been accepted by the whole world, if you like.
Well, Matt, you say that, but Jamie Dimon, I'm sure you saw his quotes last week. Jamie Dimon, the boss of JP Morgan Chase, says, "I personally think that Bitcoin is worthless." And he says, "I've always believed it'll be made illegal someplace, like China made it illegal. So I think it's a little bit of fool's gold."
This is Jamie Dimon. He's been a long-term supporter of Bitcoin and takes every opportunity he can to sing its praises. So we don't really take much what he has to say of any.
Well, you say that, Matt, but I mean, you're a NASDAQ listed exchange at Equinox, and you make great play of the fact that you are regulated, and that's great, and I get that. JP Morgan Chase is the giant of Wall Street, of the regulated US financial services industry. I mean, you have Indeed. To take him a bit seriously, do you not? Or is he just a Luddite?
I would do if his company did not offer services to buy Bitcoin. But I think it's a little bit hypocritical to sit there saying that you don't like a product and coming out and saying these type of things and then allowing your business to operate and make money from buying and selling it. So had that been the case, had he banned, you know, JP from trading and making products to sell to their customers that included Bitcoin or Bitcoin-related stocks, then yes, I'd give him a bit more credibility. But as it is, I think he's just, he knows it, he gets impressed, gets a bit of PR out of it, and probably gets a kick out of it with his friends as well.
Matt Blom is the global head of sales trading at Equinox, speaking to us this morning about Bitcoin as it continues to rise. We're above $62 a barrel, the all-time high is
$62 a barrel?
Sorry, 60. Get my commodities mixed up. $62,000 a Bitcoin, the all-time high is just under $65,000.
But it is interesting. I mean, I was joking with Matt there, and he's up for a bit of a laugh. But it's a very serious issue. Equinix is listed on the Nasdaq, so it is becoming more mainstream, isn't it? And as he says, even though Jamie Dimon personally says it's worthless, JP Morgan Chase does offer Bitcoin type product, so it is becoming more mainstream.
And where he's right is that when we'll know it's mainstream is when we are no longer asking him if it's mainstream.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Where we are on Supply Chain Watch here on the Business Breakfast. Looking at how companies are being impacted by bottlenecks around the world, from containers on ships to ships in ports to people getting stuff off the ports and then sticking them in a van. We are immune to none of it. Suzanne Brown is CEO of the baby product company Clever Mama. She is talking to us this morning about what, as a business owner who makes things and then moves them around the world, she is facing in getting her goods to us. Suzanne, it's lovely to speak to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Brandy.
The last time we spoke to you was just before the pandemic really hit, back in early 2019. You'd just opened a massive warehouse up here for your goods in the UAE. What are you seeing on the ground in terms of your ability to move products around?
Well, I suppose first and foremost, yeah, I remember that interview there at the beginning of the pandemic, well, before the pandemic hit, and I was actually in Dubai at the time, and I was sort of thinking, you know, okay, there's something coming down the line, but, you know, not in a hope could we have foreseen what was actually about to happen. And, you know, since then, we've had major, major supply chain issues, challenges, you name it, you know, like everybody else globally. So I suppose at the moment, we've got four warehouses. So we've got one in Jebel Ali there, we've got one in Ireland, the UK, and also one in China. And at the moment, our biggest challenge is, there's actually three challenges. I suppose the first one, as we know, is shipping. So at the moment, first and foremost, the rates alone have probably gone up about 500% in the last 18 months. So what used to cost me, say, $2,000 to ship a container is now costing me between $14,000 and $15,000 to ship the exact same container from the exact same location to the exact same destination. So that's a challenge, you know, because it's putting pressure on every part of supply chain. You know, at the end of the day, cash is king. And if you're paying an extra 500%, and as well as that, it's not something that you can always pass on to consumers, you know, rates like that. So shipping is certainly one. And even at that, the difficulty to get shipping. So regardless of the price of the shipping, to physically get a container is difficult. And then when you get your container, you know, you might think, oh, great, happy days. The challenge is getting a shipping vessel. And especially with the Middle East, what we're sort of finding is that a lot of the vessel owners, a lot of these people are sort of probably leasing out vessels per day or, you know, probably per hour at this stage with the rates. And what's happening is they're tending to sometimes bypass the Middle East and head straight over to the US, where they may get a higher rate, and therefore shipping to the Middle East can be a challenge. So that's one of the challenges. The other ones would be the likes of raw materials that we're seeing. So, you know, when production previously slowed down, you know, during lockdown, and now it's, you know, exploded again. So this trying to source raw materials is difficult. Cotton, coal, oil, everything is at an all-time high. You know, and you know, cotton it's probably within the last decade has been at an all-time high. And then the most latest challenge on top of that is electricity. So as we know that we've seen that, you know, the Chinese government has started to introduce electricity supply to reduce electricity supply to factories because they simply can't produce enough electricity to cope with the demand. So again, that's another challenge. So it is causing where, you know, out of stocks of certain items. So whether you walk into, we supply a number of stores over in the Middle East, and, you know, whether it's a bricks and mortar store like the likes of a Mothercare, or whether it's an online store, the likes of a First Cry or an Amazon, all of which are we have challenges with to supply in the Middle East at the moment.
Are you having to put your prices up to cope with this?
Yes, we have had to. And it is, it's, you know, unfortunately, it's inevitable, but it is a necessary, it's a necessary evil because, you know, like what's happening at the moment is we have some, let's say, bulky type items. And anybody who's shipping bulky items is really getting, you know, difficulties when it comes to pricing. In fact, some of our larger items, it's like the more we sell, the more we lose, because what would have cost me maybe $5 or maybe $8 to ship it from China to the Middle East is now the exact same product is now costing me $30. So when you sort of convert that and add in all your extras, your margins for retailers and things like that, it's making it an unprofitable item to ship. So yes, it is price increases across the board, unfortunately. And that's not just in the Middle East or the UAE. That's everywhere. You know, we're seeing it everywhere.
I've only unfortunately got 30 seconds left with you. How long do you see this continuing? What are people saying to you?
I to be honest, I don't see much between the next. I think it's going to be at least another 12 months, probably 18 months before we get to the seamless back. But it is a challenge, and it's for every retailer out there. And every brand out there is suffering the exact same, Brandy.
Suzanne Brown, thank you so much for joining us this morning and your frank talk about what it's like trying to move the products that you're manufacturing around the world, including into us here in the UAE. Suzanne Brown is the CEO of the baby product company Clever Mama. They sell in a lot of bricks and mortar retail stores here, and they sell online a lot as well.
Somehow this has got to be passed on to consumers, hasn't it? It's difficult because it's a competitive market. She can't just ramp up her prices willy-nilly. But ultimately, you can't take that hit on margin because the margins aren't that big, aren't they? They're not working on 30, 40% margins. It's difficult to absorb.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.